The meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education will please come to order. In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, Laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through public notice on March 4, 2014, faxing the three newspapers designated by the board, the Hunterdon Democrat, the Hunterdon Review, and the Express Times, posting on the district website, the main bulletin board, in the administrative office, and in each Clinton Township school. Lastly, faxing to the clerk of Clinton Township. Mrs. Spitzer, may we please have a roll call?
Ms. Grant?
Here.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Here.
Mr. Freda?
Present.
Mrs. Hand?
Here.
Mr. Malloy?
Here.
Mr. McTiernan?
Present.
Mr. Petuto?
Here.
And Mr. Sturgis?
Here.
Mr. Malloy, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Certainly. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. McLaughlin, will you serve as the process guardian for this evening's meeting?
Yes.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Clinton Township Board of Education meeting. Today is Monday, March 10th, 2014, and this is a special meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education. It is our annual budget workshop meeting. During this meeting, Dr. Clark, Superintendent of Schools, and Ms. Heather Spitzer, Business Administrator, will present the proposed budget for the 2014-15 academic year to the full board. Dr. Clark and Mrs. Spitzer have worked very closely with the members of the Facilities and Finance Committee to develop and propose the budget that you will see tonight. Board members will be permitted to direct questions regarding the budget to Dr. Clark and Mrs. Spitzer after the presentation is done. If the board recommends any changes to the proposed budget this evening, Dr. Clark and Mrs. Spitzer will work on those changes this week. A preliminary budget with any proposed changes from this meeting or the actual budget that we see tonight will be presented at the next board meeting to be held 1 week from today on Monday, March 17th. During the March 17th meeting, the board will vote on the preliminary budget. If the preliminary budget is accepted by the board, then Mrs. Spitzer will submit the preliminary budget to the Executive County Superintendent for his review and approval. Once the Executive County Superintendent approves our preliminary budget, the board will vote on the final budget on April 28, 2014. So that details the budgeting process that we'll work to this evening and through April 28th. I'd also like to include that tonight, as we normally have in our regular monthly board meetings, we will have three opportunities for members of the public to approach the mic, share their comments, and ask questions of the board. In tonight's meeting, there is one action item from our Facilities and Finance Committee. Mr. Malloy will address that action item with the board later in the meeting. Before we go any further with the agenda, I would like to make one change with the agenda. I would like to move Dr. Clark and Mrs. Spitzer's presentation from its current location to before the public comment and after the president's comments. Now I'd like to ask Dr. Clark and Mrs. Spitzer to present the proposed 2014-15 budget. Dr. Clark?
Thank you. Tonight, since this is a workshop format as opposed to a formal type presentation to the board and the community and an interactive process with the board itself, Heather and I thought we would stay at the table so we can write notes as board members are making suggestions or questions so we can keep track of it all for you for any possible changes next week. So next week you'll see us standing at the podium, but tonight we're going to be sitting here working with the board in the workshop process. What we're sharing this evening is what I want to describe as a very lean budget, and the reason for that is that if you remember when the board was setting their goals They talked about fiscal responsibility as being one of the prime goals. And when the Finance and Facilities Committee was working with us on the budget itself, they asked that we do our best to keep it as lean as possible and still meet the needs of maintaining the facilities and the investment the community has in the facilities, and to provide for student achievement and moving the curriculum forward. So that's what you'll see in this budget. As I said, it's lean, but I think we tried to get in what we need. It doesn't have very much in terms of what I would call wants. It's very need-based budget. So when I start, you're ahead of me already. Okay. So I just want to do a quick process review for everyone. We did this when we talked about Budget 101, but I just want to do a quick review for everyone. We started with needs-based, which is zero-based. We start from zero and work our process forward. We look at the priorities set by the administration and the Board of Education. We look at the district goals. We look at, unfortunately, we have to look at things like unfunded mandates, which we'll share with you this evening. We look at enrollment and enrollment trends. We do a year-over-year comparison, a state aid summary, because that changes every year. And we share a little bit about the tax rate calculations and the tax impact on the community. When we're looking at needs and goals, I just want to review for you some of the things we talked about at previous meetings. In terms of student achievement and the supportive environment for our students, we looked at things like the implementation of the middle school math program, elementary level ELA, that's English Language Arts, writing across the curriculum, and professional development aligned to the core content standards and Achieve New Jersey, the new laws relating to the teacher evaluation and teacher tenure. And we look at productive citizens, student programs for community outreach, peer-to-peer mentoring, and responsible use of social media. We also look at safety and security. As most of you are unfortunately very well aware, there have been a number of serious school safety and security incidents, and so we have been working with the county prosecutor's office, who has been coming into our schools, assessing schools, working with our teachers, and moving us forward in terms of safety and security. In fact, one of the things that's an aside you'll be hearing soon is Kevin Bird. We're working with the PTA in the district. Kevin Bird, Detective Sergeant Kevin Bird, is going to be speaking at the PTA, and I'm hoping that you will all come when he's coming to visit. As we said before, we want to maintain the community investment in facilities, and you'll be hearing some about that and what we wanted to include in the budget relating to that. And clearly, our fiscal responsibility and community partnership. The board is very aware of the need to be fiscally responsible in our environment today. I'd just like to take a quick look at unfunded mandates for all of you. One of the first ones that, you know, last week, I think, when we spoke, I held up a paper that had, I think there were something like 19 mandatory trainings in unfunded mandates and 32 policies, all right, that are either mandated or strongly suggested are relating to requirements for training and reporting out for the state. And that takes a lot of time. It uses up a lot of resources. And the state rarely puts any money into our budgets to cover that. I do want to talk first about PARC, or online testing. It's the replacement for New Jersey Ask. You've heard about that a lot at our meetings. When we got our state funding this year, I'm still going to call it an unfunded mandate, but technically, I'm not exactly correct on that, all right? And I'm going to share with you why I'm not exactly correct. The state did give us, in their state aid this year, $14,050 in the amount of what they called PARC support. And when Mrs. Spitzer and I figured it out, it was less than $12 per student to do all this planning. And I want you to be aware that just recently, all right, we spent $30,000. And that's only part of what we spent for PARC, just updating some access points and servers and bandwidth. So we have more in the budget for next year. We have been, as you well know, we did a presentation last year at budget time that we had a multi-year initiative regarding curriculum and technology, where we have been adding Chromebooks and into our classrooms, making sure that our middle school students had them in all their language arts classes. We're moving them down to sixth grade, and we're adding more into our grades 2 through 5 in this budget. And we really have to do that because our children, although they are certainly more digital natives than those of us at this table, even those of us who are very technology savvy, they need to be working on computers on a regular basis in order to take this online testing and do well on it. And I am very concerned about that for the future. Their ability to write, and I explained this, I think it was Finance Committee, I'm not sure at this point, I'm kind of a little meetinged out myself, and they're all running into each other, so please forgive me. But here's the way I'm going to explain it to you. Most of us learn to write in school with a pencil and paper, all right? We had to write our assignments, and write our paragraphs and essays. Many of our children are still doing that in many of their classes. I learned through doing my doctorate, all right, and you're going to think this is a very strange analogy, but what I learned is that I had to type and write so much on a computer that I used to think through my hand, writing, all right? Which is what many of us, I know you're all younger than I am, but many of us do. You still think through writing. However, many of us have also made the transition because of our jobs to think through our hands, typing, keyboarding, and writing in that way. Our children have to make that transition. Many of them do it already, but there are many who still do not. They still think for school, they have to write with their hands. And they have to make that transition to think that way and have the thought process come through their hands on a keyboard so that they'll be more adept in taking this testing. Because what we can't have is we can't have them losing points, not because they don't know, but because the test itself, the implementation of it is too challenging for them to manage, and because remember, it's timed. So that adds another piece of stress for those kids. So we need to have more equipment in those early grades, and that's what we're doing this year. We're moving it moving our initiative forward to do that. And to do that, mind you, Park is saying we need between 150 to 300, right, for bandwidth in the schools to take the test, because what happens is everybody is pretty much taking the test at the same time, which is kind of bizarre, but it happens that way. And so we don't want the system to crash, and that's been known to happen. So that's why we're expanding our bandwidth. We're moving to 400 so that even if there's, you know, I'm going to make a big assumption that the board office and the principals are still going to have to do work while students are testing. Crazy idea, maybe, but I don't want everything to crash so no one can do anything else. So we have to have speed between the buildings. We have to be able to do our work. Mrs. Spitzer has to be able to work on CDK because there'll be bills coming in. And so that's what we're planning. And we're actually doing technology infrastructure tests. We started them, I believe, today. And we're doing those kinds of tests to make sure we test everything way before our kids are taking the exam so we get any glitches out. So I just wanted you to be aware of all of the things that are involved in PARC. It's not just the test. It's not just the curriculum. It really is a district-wide management system that has to happen that we have to be aware of. Teacher and principal evaluations. We have to maintain the licensing. We have to maintain training modules for our staff because staff goes in and out. You have people retire that were trained on it, and now new people coming in that still have to train. We have leadership, what I'm going to call leadership opportunity costs, and that is something that we have this district education committee of teachers and administrators. Board members, Mr. McTiernan sits on the committee, and we talk about how this process is going and where we run into problems and how we can deal with them. And one of the interesting comments that was made by, and I see her sitting in front of me, so please forgive me, but I'm going to quote you, Mrs. Hammond. But it was an important piece of information that you shared with us. And not that I didn't know it, but you kind of made it very clear in the room that day. And what Mrs. Hammond talked about is when we talk about leadership, instructional leadership in a school, we talk about moving instruction forward, working with teachers not just on the curriculum and the instruction that's taking place in the classroom, but on dealing with children who have problems, where there are issues that come up, and the administrators are working with those teachers and those parents to help resolve that so those students can learn and that the other issues that they may have in their life for one reason or another don't interfere with their learning. And part of that is that the administrators are attending other meetings. They're attending team leader meetings and grade level meetings, and they work with the teams about what's the whole team concept in the middle school in particular is about knowing the students and understanding where they are and where they're going. And the evaluation process has had an impact in that all of us, and I will say to you that we don't have a plethora of administrators in this district. We kept it very lean. So I've done something that happens in some districts, but not all. The superintendent is also doing evaluations because there's no way for us to do them without all of us pitching in. I will tell you, I feel it's impacted my work because of how often I love being in the classrooms. I love doing the observations and working with the teachers. At the same time, I have other responsibilities that are impacted by running around to different schools and buildings, not just on a weekly basis, but on a daily basis, and sometimes multiple times a day. So it's very hard for the principals to get to all the meetings they have to get to know everything that's going on in their school. We don't have vice principals in all our buildings, and that means that one instructional leader kind of has to be everywhere all the time. And as much as being in classrooms provides instructional leadership too, there's a lot more to it. And it takes up a lot of hours. And I will tell you, our principals, I know they're not writing those observations and evaluations at school. They're writing them at home like I write them, because there's no other way to do it. So I want you to be aware that there's opportunity costs that we're missing because of this unfunded mandate. It's one of the reasons we put in for the waiver that you voted a week or so ago. We have medical and nursing requirements that are listed in unfunded mandates. That requires a lot of professional development and costs. It's time and a lot of reporting requirements that seem to be increasing by the day. I know that Chris Cerf said he was going to cut back on those reports, but he cuts back on one and he adds four more. I guess it'll be the new commissioner, Mr. Hespe, who will be adding four more. But that's the way it's been going so far. There have been common core changes with mandated timelines. They did not just change the curriculum standards, but they put timelines attached to them. And when you put timelines attached to them, it wasn't the normal. We have a normal kind of five-year cycle that curriculums run through. We don't have that now. The Common Core changed that. They had timelines and dates that you had to institute it by, and so new curriculum had to be written. And then the teachers had to enact it and decide, well, wait a second, we just can't buy materials immediately. We have to know what we're doing in order to know what the right materials are. And so there are additional costs because you're changing materials, you're changing texts, you're changing a number of things. Special education law and ADA compliance, that ADA is American with Disabilities Act, and that relates to 504s. And as I know this board is aware, there's no funding for ADA or 504 compliance. There is funding for special education. There's federal and state, but there is none for 504 requirements. So if a student has a 504 requirement, then the board picks up the tab on that. It's not related to special education. Doesn't mean you don't do it. You have to do that. You have to provide those things for every child, but it is not funded. HIV, harassment, intimidation, bullying, we've talked about this a lot at our meetings. It takes up a lot of administrative hours. Every time there is a report, all right, every time we have an accusation, there is a whole written process and interview process that must take place, and there are timelines attached to that. So, for example, let's say that an administrator has an observation scheduled, all right? And they have that observation scheduled, they're going into that class, they're meeting with the teacher, whatever it is they're doing. And in the meantime, a report of HIV comes in. They have to call the parent, report it to the parent, all right, immediately. They have to start the interview process. They have so many days to complete the interview process with the children. And to document that all, send out letters to parents. And even though we have some forms that we can do a little quicker than we used to be able to do them, now that we've been doing it for a couple of years, it takes a lot of time, and you have to stop what you're doing and focus on that. All bets are off, so to speak. So I wanted to share just a few of those unfunded mandates. As I said, 19 mandated trainings and 32 policies. I wanted to share with you some enrollment impact. We've all talked a lot and expressed concern about changing enrollment numbers. And so I did want to share that there is an overall trend that we are decreasing, and we're decreasing this year by approximately 95 students for the 14-15 school year. And they're in particular grade levels, which I'll share more as we get into the preliminary budget, but there's a couple of grade levels that are being particularly impacted. Our out-of-district placements right now are stable, so you're not seeing a big increase in out-of-district placements, but there is still no state cap on out-of-district tuition rates. So an out-of-district school, although it's determined by IEP, the individual educational plan, and that team, that school can change its rates pretty much at the drop of a hat, and we have to be compliant with that. So we have no control over those tuition costs. And the state is giving lower reimbursements for those tuition costs. One of the subjects that has come up, certainly, this is my second year here, it's certainly come up in the time that I've been here, is the question about considering closing a school. And I think it's important for us to talk about this, because I'm a believer in the fact that we have to confront the brutal reality. And the reality is that we see a trend in decreasing enrollment. And a lot of people then ask the question, all right, you have four schools, what are you going to do about that? And a lot of people ask, are we going to close a school? So my answer to that is that I think we have to put everything on the table and look at it. But I know that the board is doing a lot in terms of planning, in terms of demographic studies, and looking at different facilities possibilities. But one of the things that I would like to say is that in order to close a school, the state requires us and the county requires us to have a 5-year plan. So we have to know that for 5 years, that enrollment is decreasing at enough of a rate that it's also decreasing for the future. So that, for example, I can't say this year, all right, to the community, we're going to close down a school because our enrollment is decreasing for the past couple of years. The state would not allow us to do that. They want to know that it's a long enough term trend that a few years from now, we're not going to go back and say, oh, wait a second, by the way, we just had a whole development built, and now our numbers are increasing, and we have to open that school again. So what I think the board has to really be looking at is, first of all, is closing a school really the right question to ask, all right? Is it that, when you close a school, everyone thinks, oh, you're going to cut all these costs. But you have additional costs when you close a school that most people don't think of in terms of mothballing a school and protecting it, all right? Because once you close it up for a temporary time period, if you ever want to open that building again, you have to bring that building back up to code. And that can be very expensive. So you want to be absolutely certain that your numbers are going to stay down for a long time, a long time. Because I will tell you that the community will rise up as soon as they start to go up a little bit and say, well, you shouldn't have closed that school. And by the way, you shouldn't have sold that school somewhere. I have heard of some interesting ways to deal with this, where maybe you utilize the school for something else in the community, that then as you do that, you may choose to charge rent for it, whatever, but you keep it up to date as you go to maintain the building itself so that you don't lose everything. There may be some land here, but I don't know how much is available for future building. So just something that I think the board has to consider. I think that the Facilities Committee has been talking about some planning regarding that. We're not ignoring it. We are doing some investigation and some planning, but we're not at the time today to do it. I'd also like to share about school choice. This year we have a total of 99 students across selected grades. And what I mean by that, by selected grades, is that we only accepted grades where there were some available seats. And, you know, this is a delicate balance, school choice. But I want to give you an example. We did not accept kindergarten students, all right? We did not accept kindergarten students because our kindergarten numbers are going down a bit, and we can possibly look at sections there. We didn't accept first grade students. First grade numbers are going down, all right? If I start accepting lots of school choice students, then what happens is you don't get enough money in state aid to make up for hiring another teacher. So I'm trying to balance it so that the district is actually making money from school choice as opposed to adding so many more students that you have to hire more teachers and are spending more money. So we looked very carefully, the principals and I, to be careful about what grade levels we were accepting students. We do have some grade level sections decreasing, and that's going to result in a reduction in instructional salary costs. But I want to be clear that the board also directed me that they wanted class sizes to remain below their policy requirements and the state average. So although we may be reducing a section here or there, we're not increasing class size in that process. At least we're not today, unless we get a big influx of kids then. next week. We shared some good news in the last presentation, and I just want to quickly remind you of that. We're continuing a coherent vision for curriculum and programs. We have a wonderful opportunity, although I think the director of curriculum and the director of technology some days question that as a wonderful opportunity to be selected as a field test site. However, we're learning a lot as we go, and it's going to help our kids. So from my perspective, it's a good opportunity. And it helps us prepare our budget so that we stage things in as opposed to having some big amount of money spent all at once with tax increases. We also used Source for Teachers this year, which was our opportunity to support instruction with a larger availability of qualified professionals, and at the same time to manage the risk associated with implementing the Affordable Care Act. Many of you may not be aware, but in the Affordable Care Act, schools are rather unique in that we have a lot of part-time employees that accumulate a certain number of hours that would qualify for different benefits. And as part of that, Mrs. Spitzer explained to me, much to my dismay and shock, there are huge penalties related to this. And they are very easy to incur. Very easy to incur. And when I tell you huge, Mrs. Spitzer, how huge are we talking about?
If we do not offer the benefits properly, based on the law, we can be penalized $3,000 per employee in the district for each occurrence. So with approximately 300 employees in the district, we could be penalized $600,000, $900,000
per occurrence. One small tracking mistake, one. That's how much the penalty could be. So Source for Teachers is really helping us manage that and minimize the amount of risk that we have in this process. One of the things that, you know, we did talk about with some slides in the last presentation, if you haven't seen it, anybody in the audience, please, it's online, please refer to it. Ratables are trending down. And the school tax rate then remains at a slight increase over the last 5 years. But when Mrs. Spitzer and I were looking at the tax rates and the ratables, I will tell you that the ratables are trending down faster than the tax rate is going up. So that's something for us to be aware of. We have a very solid audit report. We've done a lot of fiscally responsible long-term planning in the district. We've had successful increases to the capital and maintenance reserve accounts, which we'll talk about some in capital issues, why those are so important to us. And we've marketed our prescription plan that resulted in savings for both the district and for the staff. And as you're well aware, we applied for ROD grants, that's regular operating districts, and those are grants the state was giving for 40% funding of the actual cost of our improvements. And we're doing some security improvements in the district that were being funded by those ROD grants. Not completely funded, 40%. I'm going to hand over the next portion of this to Mrs. Spitzer, our business administrator, who's going to share a little bit of the budget highlights with you so that you can take a look at those. These are the things that we've included based on our finance committee meetings. The budget we're showing you, and you have your budget books, this tonight is a workshop. That means it's not etched in stone, all right? That means this is a discussion on the board's part. So if you have questions, changes, things like that, we can still do that, all right? It is an open discussion with the board. Mrs. Spitzer?
Thank you, Dr. Clark. On the budget highlights page, we talk about several different things and several different sources of funds that we currently have available in the district. Under safety and security, we have been working very hard to make our schools more secure, and we've done that in several ways, most of which has been done with capital reserve funds for the future, as well as some of the work that we've done this summer. We've looked at what's coming up this existing for the next school year, are looking to put security vestibules at each of the schools, where the entrance ways will be more secured, as well as some other additional things that we won't talk in detail about security issues. But what this will do is it will make our schools more secure based on information that we've received from the Detective Sergeant Bird, who is our Homeland Security Specialist, and recommendations that have come from others, as well as our architect and engineer and board members. What that means is that this money isn't specifically in the 14-15 budget. What we have done is we've reserved for it in our capital reserves. So what Dr. Clark, when she mentioned about good news, we were very successful last year in planning some of these continued projects in our capital reserve funds. We were able to put a little bit away, as well as we were able to split projects out and apply for funding with the DOE. And what that allowed us to do is be able to do more with funding of 40% of our eligible costs from the School Development Authority, which is SDA, is an SDA grant. So the things that we've been able to do with that source of money are vestibules at each of the schools. The one at the middle school will be updated and made more secure. That one doesn't specifically need to be replaced due to the age of the school. A lot of door replacements, exterior door replacements, these are all going to, again, be used with capital funding or capital reserve funds, as well as 40% reimbursement from the state of New Jersey for eligible costs. So what that includes is exterior doors that are outdated and have deteriorated greatly, a large group of them to be done at Patrick McGarren School. There will also be additional doors, including in the project at Round Valley and Spruce as well. Other projects that will be coming up, and this will be things that we're working closely with the engineer on. We were successful as well of putting some money into maintenance reserves, things that were not approved in the grant. What that means is, for example, site improvements is what we called the grant, or the application that we put into the DOE. So when you see parking lots that need to be altered or corrected, or sidewalks or curbings that need to be altered or corrected, or some ADA compliance issues that we have at Spruce, those are not specifically included in the 14-15 budget. However, we have put money into maintenance reserve, and we are going to work really hard to do what we can with what we have available with us for us today.
I just wanted to say that if you remember last year, we talked about this at budget time, and what we wanted to do was to get grants, these ROD grants that were available. We thought that we could get them if we applied and put them under safety and security because of the sidewalks and such, but they were denied. So we did not get the additional money for them. That's why we have some money put aside in the reserve account, hoping that we would get the additional monies, but we didn't. So.
And what that specifically means is we did the planning last year to reserve our 60%, if you will, if we were to have gotten the ROD grant. Then with the denial, I shouldn't say denial of the ROD grant, basically they ran out of money. They funded a very large one of our projects, and that amount of money that they had available to them was then appropriated to all of the school districts that applied for ROD money. What we did is we split them out in two applications just in case one was not accepted. We didn't risk the others as well. So what that means is we're kind of missing the 40%, if you will, in our planning process. So that's why you will see them again appear in terms of prioritizing and seeing what we can do next year with the reserves we have available to us at this moment. And we are working with the engineer in prioritizing those projects. You know, he has a lot of recommendations, things that we might be able to do with the reserve monies. But as we continue to talk about this, there are some things that have come up that are more urgent, and we have budgeted some funds for, and we will also need some reserve funds. So I'll get more specific about that in a few minutes. So those are the different sources of money for funding these long-term projects or large security and safety issues that we're trying to address in the district. We have the capital reserves, which is tied in with a 40% grant from the state of New Jersey, or a ROD grant, if you will, which is a regular operating district grant. We have some money in our maintenance reserve account where we can use that. And our final source is then the current budget. So there will be some things in the current budget that we have budgeted to carry forward with a lot of these projects. The biggest thing is wastewater treatment plant repairs at Patrick McGarren School. We have run into some pretty serious deficiencies, if you will, in that plant, which has limited its functioning. We're looking at, again, with the engineer as well as our wastewater treatment plant operator, in terms of seeing what we can take care of as quickly as possible to basically push off some sort of a failure, which could cost us a lot more money out of future budgets and possibly closing of the school without it being voluntary. So in this 14-15 budget, there is $50,000. That's in the capital fund 12, if you will, which is capital outlay account for focusing specifically on Patrick McGarrick School.
One of the things that I'd like to share is there's two pieces to this issue. One, clearly, is that we have a school that would be impacted by this if we don't make these repairs. And that's a serious problem. But the second part of that is that let's take a giant leap and say that we didn't need Patrick McGarrick. All right? Does that mean that we shouldn't do the wastewater treatment plant? And I would say to you that no, you have to deal with the wastewater treatment plant, whether you have Patrick McGarrick School there or not. The reason being is that because of the problems that could occur, fortunately we've been able to do some things to stave them off, but the problems that could occur would impact DEP fines for the district. And I don't think any of us want to go down that particular road. And so that's why the engineer is really recommending that we deal with that. No matter what we ultimately do with that building, we have to take care of that problem.
So those are basically the big projects that we have planned coming up this summer. You're going to see a lot of things here pending the approval of this budget, as well as the final SDA approvals for the grants that we have currently on the books for improvements going into next school year. Curriculum and program, we'll talk briefly about mandated programs or mandated budgeted money, as well as things that are driven by the new core curriculum. Professional development is one thing that we've continued in our budget. It's not only mandated, but it's also part of the core curriculum. Dr. Clark has touched on a lot of this. We've put a lot of curriculum and technology-based programs in place that we need to continue as we go forward with these programs. We're in year two of a planning process, so there is additional training to the next level. We did do a big piece of it in last school year, or the school year we're in now, so it won't be as big a number, but it still is a need in our budget. The teacher and principal evaluation system, again, that's a mandatory cost. We have ongoing licensing, we have ongoing training that will continue for the life of this program. So it wasn't just a once and done in last year's budget. It's a continuing cost that will be in every year budget going forward. Instructional hardware and supporting technologies. We talked about that again in terms of being in the second year of a plan of implementing technology and coupling it with our curriculum in our classrooms. Dr. Clark spoke in length about that in terms of our curriculum and mandated unfunded expenses. Leveled LEA materials, math grade 6 through 8 texts, social studies materials grade 3 and 4, and informational texts. Those are all mandated based on the core curriculum that Dr. Clark talked about earlier, and that as well is included in this year's budget. Additional part-time math basic skills instructor at Round Valley. We currently have a 0.5 math support instructor. The board has, and the curriculum committee has recommended that we go to make that 0.5 individual or that position a full-time position. That is included in this budget as well.
I don't know if I was clear enough in how I wrote this, but it's making the part-time person full-time, which also means that they also would receive benefits.
In addition to that, the curriculum committee as well as the finance committee has looked at adding a math coach for the middle school. For the same support reasons, Dr. Clark, if you want to elaborate on that.
Yes. If you recall, when we talked about my miracles, we did some analysis of the Format program, which is a math support program in eighth grade, and the results of that. And one of the things that we looked at in the curriculum committee and we talked about as a board, and I believe at our presentation here, was the need to find some additional support younger, all right, that we were missing the boat in that we had addressed a problem in eighth grade, but we had missed it in earlier on. And seventh grade was one of the areas that we wanted to find some support for in math. There are very big changes, as those of you who were fourth grade parents last year experienced and lived through very painfully firsthand, in math curriculum changes for the Common Core. It's also impacting our middle school students this year with the major changes there for them. And it's important that we move that basic skills person at Round Valley with our fourth, fifth, and sixth students and up to full-time and add in a math coach to support our seventh graders at the middle school. Do you want me to take the next? I'll take the next one, too. We're also recommending that we add one administrator. We're looking at a supervisor type position, and that would be, I'm going to call it a dean of students, to support students at the middle school and instruction there, as well as pick up additional evaluations. I did want to share, I asked our data analysis administrator to give me some figures on the evaluation totals that we have in the district. We have a total right now of 579 evaluations, all right? Those are done by 9 administrators currently, all right? Normally, they would be done by 8, but I just couldn't leave that to our principals alone. It was just too much. So I picked up a batch. But 579, we put in a waiver to reduce them by 135 this year. We haven't received the waiver yet, I'm hoping, but if not, we have to do those. I'm going to give a low number and say that each evaluation takes, on the low side, 4 hours each, and some of them take more than that, depending on what the subject area is, whether it's a brand new teacher, whether it's a tenured, experienced teacher, it depends. So if you take that 579 by 4 hours, you're up over 2,000 hours, all right? And it's near impossible for us to get them all done and do the rest of our jobs. And so I just wanted to share a few numbers with you. If you consider that one HIB report can take days out of your schedule, just one report, because you have to interview, you could wind up interviewing a dozen students and teachers. So you have to take notes. Think of it like I know this sounds crazy, but think of it like a formal police investigation. All right, where you have to take all the notes, you have to document everything, you have to write the reports. Every report I get is easily this thick in pages. All right. That has to be signed by everyone. So you have, and what you have is you have your your school specialist, anti-bullying specialist, involved in it. You have the principal involved in it, and you ultimately have the superintendent involved in it. And you know every board meeting you all approve the reports that we have. So you could easily lose a week in a heartbeat over one HIV investigation. So it's becoming, I don't know that when the state mandated these things, I believe the intention was good. I believe they want to help children. And I think some of it does do that. But I don't think they thought about the rest of the impact to a school district in terms of time and really moving what our primary job is, which is taking care of kids and impacting instruction. And if you're becoming an investigator, you impact instruction much less. So I just wanted to share that's part of the reason why we're recommending one administrator. I know there are districts are doing a lot of different things relating to this. We're very lean on administration in this district. Some of the high schools do have additional supervisors for subject areas, and they do, sometimes they teach some classes and they do evaluations. And they can look at those people and kind of add and subtract to their jobs. I don't have people here who do that. We are a K-8 district. We don't have those subject area supervisors, so I have nobody that I can repurpose, so to speak. Everybody's teaching classes and teaching kids, and there's no way to rearrange those figures. They are what they are. We also talked with you a little bit about the facilities position in terms of maintenance of our buildings. We hired someone at, I believe, our recent board meeting, and we lost that person. They came back and turned down the job. So we're kind of back to square one. We have some very good people who are doing some very good things right now, stepping up to the plate. But we're looking at how we can reconfigure these positions to really do what we need to do in all four buildings. We also have a position that is IEP related, and that's a reading support instructor. That we have a number of students who need that specialized reading support. Right now we're looking at an Orton-Gillingham program for them, and so we need that teacher to support that program. And so that's what we're looking at. As I said before, we are still, even with those additions, we are going down staff. There's no two ways about it. We are decreasing our salary lines. Mrs. Spitzer, year over year?
As we looked at the year-over-year comparison, what I mean by that is where we currently are in the 13-14 revised budget as compared to where we think we will be for the 14-15 budget year. The benefit lines are decreasing. There's a few reasons for that. One is reduction in some of our salary lines, which of course would reduce the benefit lines. This is going to be the next year in the teacher and staff contribution of towards their medical benefits, so that will be an additional increase or decrease, if you will, for the Board of Education as we phase in that process. And also one thing that we were successful in doing with the staff members is we were able to market our prescription plan, and effective February 1st of this year we were able to change to an equal to or better plan that provided savings not only to the Board of Education but also to staff members who are enrolled in the program. Our utilities, if you compared our revised utilities to where we're going for 14-15, simply are decreased. The reason is because we've had some pretty extraordinary expenses for the current year due to the very cold weather that we've been experiencing. So not only from the natural gas perspective of actually heating the buildings, but also from the electrical perspective, as all of those types of things to heat the unit are driven by electricity. So we don't anticipate at the level that we've experienced this year to continue in the future. So year over year, you will see a decrease on those lines. But if you compare them to last year's actual, they are higher. The biggest piece is because of what's going on this year with unexpected expenditures. The staffing instructional salary lines, as Dr. Clark explained, will be decreasing in large part due to the declining enrollment. With that said, the goal obviously is to keep the class sizes at policy level and below state average. The goal in being able to achieve these changes in our enrollment with our staffing salaries is to do it through natural attrition. So for example, if we have a retirement, maybe it's a position that doesn't need to be refilled, or if we have a maternity leave, for example, or someone who won't be coming back, that's the goal, is to not have to actually reduce staffing, but to be able to do it with natural changes in our staffing requirements.
And that is our goal. It doesn't mean that will exactly work like that, because you can't always predict. So there may be some decreases in other ways as well.
In terms of the capital outlay, it's what I call Fund 12. So if you hear me refer to funds, that's in the current budget and what is budgeted. There is money in there for some additional wiring that we need to do at the middle school because of the park mandate. And in addition to that, we did put $50,000 in Fund 12, as we discussed in dealing with the Patrick McGarren wastewater treatment plant out of budgetary funds. Professional development year over year is down if you look at the line items specifically. The reason is because we did incur substantial preliminary costs last year. So because all of these programs were in their initial stage, it required a lot more professional development and summer training for teachers to come in, as well as to have some other individuals come in to do training. We don't expect that trend to continue at the same level, even though we do have a substantial professional development budget. What the next slide is doing is it's discussing what our changes in our state aid numbers are year over year. This is the amount of money that the state has committed to us with the passing of the state budget to fund our schools. Our transportation aid, I'll just be general, overall, we're pretty flat. We're going up $28,100. The biggest piece is, you'll see if you look at the details of this slide, our school choice aid is declining based on enrollment. We were funded last year on 112 students. This year we have committed to 99. So of course that's a reduction in state aid because we're paid on a per pupil cost. But what the state has done, because Governor Christie did promise that we would not receive a reduction in state aid, is they put it in an adjustment aid line. So you see that exact amount of money in adjustment aid. That is a bucket of money that going forward could potentially be at risk. So those are things that the board considers each time we hear that there potentially could be a reduction in something. That's the first thing they'll look at. In addition to that, we did actually get an increase in state aid. Dr. Clark did talk a brief bit about the increase that, or the monies that the governor has given us for our park readiness aid. And that is for us to implement PARC, which you've heard us discuss in detail in terms of the potential or the actual costs that we're incurring in the district. We have received $14,050, which, as Dr. Clark explained, is less than $12 per student projected to take the test. In addition to that, we received an additional $14,050 in per pupil growth aid. So overall, year over year, our net state aid increase is $28,100. The assessment for debt service is an assessment that in the Christie administration, they have begun to push down bonding that they've receive to fund the grants that we so graciously apply for, and they're pushing the cost of the interest on those bonds down to the school districts. Our assessments stay the same year over year at $89,000. So even though it looks like it's in our state aid, we have an expenditure of $89,000 that goes right down to the state. The next slide discusses how we calculate the tax rate. This is nothing specific to Clinton Township. It's how we calculate the tax rate. All school districts calculate the tax rate and what needs to be raised in tax levy on the taxpayers of Clinton Township. One thing I do want to recap is something that Dr. Clark did speak about briefly. It's something we spoke about in our last presentation, is that over the last 5 years, the school district has only increased their tax levy 1.99% in the total bill, if you will, our 40% or 47% of your tax bill. What that means is that the board has done a really good job trying to contain costs as best as possible, looking at things specifically as needs for the district. And they've been successful in doing that as our ratables go down. And what that means, as we do the calculation, and I'll just briefly explain this slide. Ratables are the assessed values of the home and businesses in Clinton Township. That number has been trending down for several years. Over the last 5 years, that number has decreased over 17%, almost 18%. So what that means, if you're doing a basic calculation, having a numerator and a denominator, as the denominator gets smaller, obviously your end result also would get bigger. So as your tax, even if your tax stayed flat, if your ratables are going down, your tax rate is going up. What I mean by that is, in this projected budget, we are projecting an $80,171 increase in tax levy assessment in both the general fund as well as debt service. Debt service is the referendum that was voted on in 2006 to build the new school. That is something that we can't control. It was a decision that was made in the past. What we have been successful in doing is refunding it and decreasing the rate in which we have to pay. That has saved the district a substantial amount of money over the life of the loan. We have projected, the debt service, so your principal and interest payments for next year are $2.1 million. And we do have some money that we have to give back on those lines, so that rather than it going up about $70,000, it's only going to go up about $30,000. Our general fund tax levy is the amount we talked about in the last presentation. If we take our need-based budget, zero-based budget, and theoretically by zero-based budgeting, we're zero-based revenue as well. So we take what our needs are on the expenditure side. We look at our funding coming from outside sources, being the state, state funding, or we do have some preschool tuition funding. We do have some tuition that we receive from Lebanon Borough, who send their 7th and 8th graders here. We have capital interest income. Those types of things are considered on our funding side. And the difference between what we need and what we're able to have funds for is basically the tax levy. So what we've been successful in doing this year is basically keeping our tax levy flat, meaning it's only going up $50,000 from what the actual tax levy was last year. What that means is that all of the things that Dr. Clark explained that we've had to include in this budget are included with a $50,000 increase, which is less than a penny to the average household in Clinton Township. What that means is that as our total tax change is going up 0.66%. What the next slide does is it talks about what that means, how that calculates for those of you living in Clinton Township and how it equates to the tax bill that you receive in August when the new ones come out. This information is received from the tax assessor in Clinton Township. So these are accurate numbers as far as what the projections were that they approved last month at their meeting. The average assessed value, property value in Clinton Township is decreasing 0.26%. That's what we just talked about in terms of the ratables. The local tax on an average assessment is 0.33% based on this budget that we've projected. What that means, if you go back to the previous page, you can see that the percentage change impact is 0.33%. Okay. The formula isn't working. The 0.33% is the percentage change based on the taxes we put forward. I apologize, that 0.66 is not correct. And what that is the $80,000 compared to the previous year. The way we calculate the actual cost to the taxpayers in Clinton Township is we take the average assessed value and we multiply it by the tax rate that we determine based on the tax levy needed divided by the ratables. On the average assessed value, which is calculated, the local school tax assessment for next year for the 14-15 budget is a $15 increase on an average assessed home per year. We did take that one step further if you look at the bottom of the slide, and I have enlarged it on the next page. So for the Clinton Township taxpayer, the net levy is increasing 0.33%. So on a $100,000 assessed value, we assume that on a 2014 tax assessment of $100,000, and we decreased it by the decreased percentage in the ratable of 0.26%. So as of 2013, a home assessed at $100,000 will be assessed, if every house decreases or every 100,000 increases at the rate of the ratables. That same house will be assessed at $99,740 in 14-15.
Just very quickly, looking at the values, the assessed property values, I don't know if I'm on that slide yet.
Oh, did I not miss it? Oh, well.
Yeah, as I look at this.
This is a blow up of the detail.
Right, if you go back, you've got a decrease of assessed property value of 0.26% or $1,000. The 2014-15 projected property values were $394,278. Mm-hmm. The actuals in 2013-14, that's actually an increase, according to my math, of roughly $2,140.
From 2013-14 to 2014-15?
Yes.
What the percentage represented is the decrease in ratables. So the annual increase or decrease is the percentage based on the ratables. So that's a calculation.
So it's not the percentage of the average assessed property value. It's the average, the decrease of the total ratables, then.
Yes.
Okay.
The percentage. It's the 2.67. Right. And I need to clarify that on the slide.
Okay. That's okay. Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah. The 394 is a calculated number.
Right.
Based on an actual, and it's just based on the ratable. So I will make that more clear on the final presentation. So decreasing at the rate that the ratables are decreasing, that $100,000 worth of assessed value will be $99,740. This is very simplistic. Taking the average rate or the tax rate change from $1.15 to $1.16. And that is a fraction, so it's not as clear as, you know, $1,150. That calculation on a $100,000 home in 13-14 was $1,149.54 per $100,000. That same number on the new tax rate for 14-15 is $1,153.33, or $3.79 per $100,000 of assessed value per year, which is 0.33% increase year over year. So those are the basic numbers, or those are the numbers of all of the things we've discussed in terms of what currently is in this budget. So for all of the mandates and core curriculum needs and the staffing needs and the natural increases that we need to be able to run the district, included in this budget is $3.79 per $100,000 per year to the Clinton Township taxpayers.
So on an average house, that's $16 a year?
If you do 379 times the 392, it's $14.85 a year.
So one of the questions that the Finance and Facilities Committee asked is, well, what's not in the current budget? I would say the first thing that I would have to say that's not in the current budget is there's no full-day kindergarten program in the current budget. There is a committee that's working on that. There has not been a formal recommendation for it yet. I will say to you all that it looks to me like the way most districts are going this year, depending on what their final budgets come out at, we may be the only district in Hunterdon County that does not have a full-day kindergarten program. And so we're going to need to consider the consequences of that in terms of housing and other concerns for the district. One of the things, it's a small thing, but we did not include a new maintenance truck. We're doing repairs on it, but we're not purchasing a new one yet. At Spruce Run, we have an older playground, and I think we're going to need to consider some improvements as we move forward. One of the other areas is we did not include additional full-time secretaries. I know that there was a lot of talk and discussion about this and whether or not we needed to do this for security reasons and some other reasons, but at the end of the day, it did not make the current cut. We have some drainage and slope issues at the back of the current middle school and some lighting concerns in the parking lot. Those are, I think, bigger projects that need to be considered for the future and probably need to go to planning boards and things like that. But I think we need to consider those kinds of things as we move forward. There are a number of other projects that the architect has in a long-term planning process, all right? There's little things like signage at Round Valley, but there's some bigger things, too, as I spoke about before in terms of the slope and drainage issues at the middle school. So I just wanted to share that we should be thinking about these as future projects, but, we can't do everything in one budget or even two or three. That's why they're called long-term, and we have to consider these things for future planning. I also wanted to put a note that it's not that it's not in the current budget, but it is an additional consideration for us. There's nothing to really be done about it for the board's perspective, but we don't have any finalized district association contracts settled at this time. None of them are settled. They are all in process. And that means that we make estimates as we're doing our budget, and that's the best we can do. So I just wanted you to be aware of that.
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, in reference to your question in terms of the tax calculation slide, the slide has not, I made a mistake when I updated the slide, but the tax calculation in your book is correct.
Cool.
So that will be updated. The numbers that I was talking about is correct, but if you looked at it,
appreciate the clarification.
Before it gets posted, I want to know that.
Oh, absolutely. But if you look at your tax calc in your book and what we've discussed, that is correct.
So, I'm assuming that there are questions from the board and discussion.
I have a quick question as I look at this. And realistically, I could probably go through the line by line and figure it out myself, but we're all here. Do we have an estimate on the cost savings that utilization of Source for Teachers can generate across all four schools?
I don't think that you have an immediate cost savings right for the first year. I think it's going to be something that's going to play out. The first thing I would say to you is I don't know if you can calculate this part in dollars and cents, but what you had every morning in our schools is the principals did the crazy, oh my God, we don't have sub coverage. How are we going to cover our classes? And that was the first thing they were doing every morning. There's certainly less of that with Source for Teachers because they've taken on that responsibility and they've given us additional staff to do that. And the other piece of that calculation that is really hard to, I think, put a number on is if we were managing those things ourselves in-house and there was an error made, and you know, our people are wonderful and they work really hard and spend long hours, but it's easy to make an error in this.
Totally understood, and the ACA compliance issue is material and important. The reason I ask is it looks like there was, on some line items, there were some reductions and then some additions relative to professional services and resource for teachers work. If it's essentially at this point a budgeted wash, that's okay.
Yes. I think it's more of a wash right now. I don't think you're going to see a decrease or a savings at this point.
Thank you. That's the answer.
Can I ask about the playground and Spruce Run? Are there any safety concerns about not making any improvements at this time? And if so, or if not, how much would that cost approximately?
The playground at Spruce Run, we do have it inspected. It is kept to the safety standard. However, it could be better because it's aging. I don't have a specific cost. It was one of the things we did talk about as a group in terms of using some of the maintenance reserves. But that actually is a little tighter than what we anticipated. So it is on our list. It is a long-term consideration. It is maintained and inspected to the level of safety it needs to be.
I think the question is if you were to replace the whole playground versus do some minor updates and repairs. You know, the last time I replaced a playground in a district, it was $50,000. And that was a number of years ago, so I think those prices are probably a bit out of date. But it was also a PTA community project, and they raised the money. And that might be something that we can talk about at Spruce Run. That might be another way to address this and maybe make some minor repairs. I think we have some big issues in terms of the wastewater treatment plant, that, you know, we're trying to make sure that that is taken care of and hopefully covered by this budget and what we have in some, you know, reserve accounts. If it's not, if it goes over that, you know, we have to look at that carefully. If it doesn't come up as high as we're thinking it's going to be based on our engineering reports, then you might have some money that you can move towards something like the Spruce Run Playground.
Okay.